Welcome to the One Big Thing Podcast, where inspiration meets transformation. Well, welcome back to the One Big Thing Podcast. I'm your host, Steve Campbell. Welcome in. If you've never been to the podcast before, this is an interview style show where I have the pleasure of interviewing people from all walks of life. And today, I always say these are special ones because they are to me. I have Coach Phil Fulmer on with me today. If you're here celebrating Coach, welcome. I hope this isn't your last stop on the One Big Thing. But Coach and I are going to spend some time today sharing of his rich history, his involvement in football, but also family life. I've seen him as a grandfather. And really, our connection came by way of being at Sports Fields, him celebrating his grandkids. As you guys know, for me hosting this show, I got four kids that are 8 years old and younger. And so I'm on every ball field from football to basketball everything you can think of. And Coach has always been there with me. So as I was thinking about who I could have on the show, I approached Coach one day and said, hey, you ever like coming on podcasts? And he said, hey, let's do it. So for those that are here celebrating Coach Phil Fulmer, welcome. But for those that you know are not from East Tennessee, if you're watching on YouTube today on our NQR Media channel, you're going to see me and my orange and white celebrating the University of Tennessee, which is where Coach's background came from. But for Coach, for those that may not know you, obviously you have a rich history in college football. Do you want to give us a high-level overview of who you are?
Sure. I guess right now I'm mostly a grandfather and husband enjoying that part of my life. But as you look back, I come from a small town in Middle Tennessee, Winchester, Tennessee. I look back and think of the people that were so important to me, starting in Winchester, you know, just almost our little bubble that we're able to have. Had great mom and dad, wonderful people. They were really hardworking, like a lot of people. My dad had two jobs all of his life, and mom was a stay-at-home mom, but just a very strong Christian, loving family, and learned a lot about work ethic early on. And I just appreciate, oftentimes tell this, how there were teachers and counselors and coaches that were in my life very early that showed us a lot outside of the bubble. So now we fast forward all these years, and I'm on the field still, but with my grandchildren, you know, hopefully giving them kind of the same kind of appreciation for other people and for sports and all that it brings to you, from character building and commitment, sacrifice, and all those things we talk about athletics. I live that. And then as we got older, I realized that, you know, hey, I got a chance at this, and I was hoping to get some small college opportunity somewhere eventually. And again, our coaches, our baseball coach was a wonderful Christian man and strong and led us in that direction. And FCA became very important to us, Fellowship Christian Athletes, during that time. And our other coaches as well, they all had their impact on me and a group up of us. And I'm not bragging about this, but we didn't have a very good team early on. A lot of new guys. A lot of the seniors didn't stay out with our football team, and our coach kind of built us from the ground up. And we saw how a challenge can become an opportunity for us. And we took a group of kids that hadn't played very much, and we weren't very good. And then the next year, and the next year, and the next year, we were ended up state. We didn't have actually quote state champions at the time, but in the state, we were one of the best teams, certainly. So played in the big bowl games and all those kind of things. And so realized, hey, you know, this hard work thing does pay off, you know, and these people that we have surrounded ourselves with are uplifting and helping us along the way. have a group of friends that from that time, that era, that are still just best friends. You know, we're getting to that place in life where we lose somebody every now and then. But we've all stayed really, really close. And I can't tell you enough about my upbringing. And it was just, you know, it was like Mayberry almost, you know, and then the influence that all my coaches and teachers had. And then I had a chance to come to Tennessee. I looked around, you know, quite a bit. You know, Alabama was great then and as they are now. And you know, having a chance to play for Coach Bryant, my coach was a big Coach Bryant guy. So actually, early on, committed to go to Alabama because of Coach Bryant and how naive we are. You know, that somebody convinced me that he was too old and he was going to retire. And I look back, he wasn't that old, you know, but I was afraid he wasn't going to be there. And Coach Dickey had come to Tennessee as the head football coach, and they beat Alabama in 1967. So I just thought, you know, one, it was in state, but I was really excited about Coach Dickey being a young, energetic, exciting coach, had the whole state, you know, happy and pleased with what they were doing. So I changed my mind, tried to get my dad to tell Coach Bryant for me, you know, because, you know, we didn't have all the communications thing we had back then, just had, you know, phone. And I did not want to tell him. I mean, that was so hard to do. And of course, he's, you know, he's a professional guy. And he said, well, you might not ever beat us, but, you know, good luck to you, the kind of thing. For a 17-year-old guy, that's a big deal to have to tell Coach Bryant. So come to Tennessee. My goal had always been to play linebacker at Tennessee. They had all these this lineage of great linebackers that had come through in my time as they do now. But that wasn't to be. And I figured out pretty quickly, I need to find a place to play. There was all these all-ACC and all-American guys in front of me that was I going to be willing really to wait that long? I moved to tight end, moved from linebacker to tight end for a few days, and then they found a spot, you know, that the first day of spring, we had our freshman team, and we got through that, but first day of practice in spring football, I was the sixth team left guard, you know. Now, they don't even have six guards anymore. There was, you know, the numbers were so much different. You know, there was a couple hundred guys on the team, and you hope to find a way to, you know, to play there. And I did, you know. We busted a rear and found a way to play a lot as a sophomore, and then more as a junior, and then started as a senior, and we ended up one of the co-captains of the team, which is still one of the greatest honors I've ever had. So got through that and decided that I wasn't sure what I wanted to do, and in life, you know, I was taking all these different tests to find my strengths and all those kinds of things. And I thought I was going to go to Procter Gamble and go to work. And of course, I'm shortening all this quite a bit, but Coach Battle came to me, who had become the head coach, still a great friend, wonderful man. And he said, you know, you probably could be a pretty good football coach. You ought to try it, you know. And I'd already graduated. I was working on my master's, and I was going to be there anyway. So I said, sure, I'd like to try that, but I'd like to go back and coach defense, like, which I came to do at Tennessee anyway. And plus I had a guy named Gary Wyant, who was the secondary coach, who I later hired as the coach. And I saw how he impacted the kids the same as my high school coaches had. Baseball, basketball, football coaches back in high school, he had that same personal relationship. And it really struck me that I could do this, and I could, you know, you know, I might get a job someday coaching somewhere, you know, in high school or whatever. Never really dreaming that I'd have the opportunity. And then one of our coaches on the staff, first of all, they gave me lots of duties that they didn't really usually give to graduate assistants, you know, a car and go recruiting. That was all legal, obviously. I scouted, right out of the box, I learned from maybe the best coach I've ever been around, George Cafego. You know, he takes me that spring and I'm going to all these stadiums and seeing all these places. And I'm actually learning from the person that's scouted for 40 years for them, you know, how to watch a game. And so I had this wonderful opportunity to go all over the country and do all the scouting and come back and stay up all night. The night I got the same night, come back. And then I had to present to the coaches what I saw in my scouting report. And to my pressure now, I was a young graduate assistant at 22 years old, having to basically help build the foundation for the next game plan, you know. So, and then the technology was so much different. We had to splice all the film together. And so, you know, it's an all night deal, you know, and you just, then you start all over again. And I loved it. I loved every minute of it. And I had a chance to have a recruiting area that helped me get started professionally. And one of the coaches, Jim Wright, the offensive coordinator, got an opportunity to be the head coach at Wichita State University. And he came to me and said, I was on the road going to Los Angeles where the convention was to maybe have a chance to meet some other coaches at other staffs and everything and have a chance to get a job. And I never made it to Los Angeles because he called me en route, you know, and I was about two-thirds of the way there driving. So that was in a Pinto with another buddy, yellow Pinto. And it's a wonder we made it out of the county, you know. So I look forward to talking to Coach Wright, and he hired me on the spot. And here I show up to Wichita, Kansas, without a coat. It's dead winter, you know. I have to go buy a coat and bust my rear getting off the plane because you had to go down the steps to the, you know, and fall down. But I was so excited. And a couple of days later, I'm on the road recruiting for Wichita State, and I stayed there for 5 years. Great learning experience. We took a really bad team and turned it around. In the fourth year, we played for the conference, and then we had some issues, and I had the bad experience of everybody getting fired but me. They asked me to, you know, take care of the office and talk to the next coach, and I really didn't want to stay, you know, there. So I had a chance then to go back to Nashville to be an assistant coach at Vanderbilt. Again, a wonderful experience. George McIntyre was a strong Christian guy and loved his kids. And again, I'm back to that relationship that I had in high school, you know, with all these coaches. And now I'm one of the coaches, you know, and still have friends from those staffs and those players there at Vanderbilt. Very fortunate. I was there 11 months, and then Coach Majors gave me a chance to come back to Tennessee. And, you know, now I'm 28, and coming back to Tennessee, which was a real, real fortunate break for me to be able to do that. So then learned a lot the first year. Had four seniors and a junior. They had been well coached. And I tell the story, I did not realize how important it was to be recruiting your own players, you know, because all of a sudden those four seniors were gone, and the junior was a senior, but he couldn't practice very much because he'd had so many injuries. So I had a lot of really young guys, and all of a sudden we weren't very good in the offensive line. In fact, we were bad, those guys. And you know, head coach is on my rear end to make them better. And we're a bad looking group of guys, young. All of them are young, and we laugh about it now. How great, hard a time it was, but also a great time, you know, because we took the challenge and like got beat. We got beat the first two games, like 44-0 and 44-7. That's not acceptable at Tennessee at all. But now those kids started getting better, and you know they were growing and getting, you know, and ended up winning 8 or 9 ball games and went to a bowl game. But then as they grew up, I had a bunch of men that were boys, and now they're men. And we built a pretty good legacy of offensive linemen out of those group. We had I can't remember. I think there was like maybe 19 guys in my years of coaching the offensive line that played professionally, you know, which is a lot. And we built a good cycle of kids coming in and working their way up and doing really well. And then I got the chance to be a coordinator. Actually, before that, I guess I was the assistant head coach and then became the coordinator. And that was another goal later on, you know, I had a chance to experience that and had super guys around me, David Cutcliffe and you know, that whole staff of guys, really, really fun, you know, good coaches. And then later on had a chance to be the head coach at Tennessee. So took all those experiences for all those years, going back to my roots at Franklin County, well, at Little League, really, because I had Little League coaches like we are right now, you know, that were teaching us the basics but also, you know, hugging on us and you know, supporting us and bragging on us and maybe correcting us when we needed to. And all these years later, you become the head coach at Tennessee, and we built the same culture there with we're family, we're going to support each other. Obviously, you've got different kinds of issues all the time because they're just young people growing up as well and come from families and, you know, good and bad. If we're going to do anything, we're going to help them grow from adolescence to manhood, you know, and in the same token, we have to, you know, win games to keep our jobs and compete for championships and all those things. And we were able to do that. You know, the most special team I get asked all the time, what is your favorite team? And that's a really impossible question to answer because there were dynamics around all of them that were really special. The national championship was great. All those wonderful years with Peyton as a quarterback and all those, I mean, we had so many guys going to professional football and, you know, again, we're all still close, you know, we had a beautiful 98 celebration this past fall, you know, and we had about 120 guys on the team and there was 100 of them that came back, you know. So it was a really, really special time. Life throws you curves sometime, you know, and 58 years old, I don't have the job I had, you know, before. And I said something then that I really still have to remind myself of, you know, when you things don't go well, you know, you should not take poison and expect somebody else to die. You know, so I was not going to be negative and ugly to, you know, all my with school. Now, I had a, you know, good heart to hearts with some people that I wasn't very happy with, you know, but that's business. But I love my university and I'm really excited about where we are now with the coaches Coach Hoppleston, a fabulous job. And I guess before all that, I had a chance to be the athletic director. My wife would tell me I really have failed at retirement, you know, a couple different times, because I like being busy and I like you know, being able to also have time with my children and grandchildren and the wife and celebrate these years that we can celebrate. So after the athletic director's thing, I'm back to being the assistant to the assistant peewee baseball coach. No fun.
Hey everyone, Steve Campbell. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. If it's made an impact on you, I would love to take a moment to ask you to subscribe to this podcast so you never miss an episode. But I would also love for you to leave a 5-star rating and review. Your ratings and review help other listeners know that this show is worth their time. So thank you so much for tuning into The One Big Thing, and let's enjoy the rest of the episode.
Well, and I think what's great about your story is, you know, I've seen you on a field now with your grandkids, but you've coached some very prolific, you know, for any sports fan, Peyton Manning is such a well-known hot commodity. But even me being a huge Dallas Cowboys fan, one of my favorite tight ends to come out of the University of Tennessee was Jason Witten, and watching his work ethic. But I think what's great about your story, and which is, again, if you're new to this podcast, it's not just about celebrating the 1998 national championship and all the high water marks. It's the curveballs. It's the twists in the road. It's the plot twists that no one could have, you know, ever thought were coming, which is makes us all human beings. And I think for a lot of people out there today, they're trying to make sense of the season that they're in right now. And with your story, you know, you were at Tennessee working in the role that you were in, and you got this opportunity at Wichita State. I love that you were the only person that survived cuts and was asked to stay on, which I think is a testament to who you are as a person. And even to have the ability to come back to Tennessee years later, it sounded like maybe a 10 year gap between when you were there before and when you came back, I think shows that you've probably done the right things. You've never burned bridges. You've been a person of integrity, and that's what created an open door for you to come back. But between all of the coaching successes, even just the big life lessons learned, you have such a rich history here in East Tennessee where people celebrate you as a coach because, again, you did something which is very hard to do, which is you won at the highest level in NCAA football. And that kind of gravitas follows you wherever you go. But I get to just see you as a grandpa on the sideline. And, you know, now it may not be coaching a Peyton Manning, but I see it's your coach and your grandkids. And I'm sure that there are life lessons that when you talk with your children or even your grandkids that you can pull from your story about what you learned and what grandpa's gone through. So if you had the opportunity, I guess today, you know, as you know, before we came on this show, I said, you know, a lot of your listeners are going to be like me, 37 years old, so mid-30s, 40s, you know, they're married, they're trying to navigate marriage, they're trying to navigate, you know, building careers much like you did, as well as just honoring their children and taking care of them. If you had an opportunity that, you know, not maybe to sit in front of your athletes, but just everyday people that are trying to figure out this game called life, you know, what would be those wisdom nuggets that you would share backwards about just life, perspective, you know, showing up? You don't win every game in life, but, you know, what are those life lessons that if you had the opportunity to share with somebody today, you think might still resonate in 2024?
Well, you know, it's a great question because we, you know, a synopsis that we did, whatever, in 10 minutes, you know, there's lots and lots of ups and downs, you know, that go through that to just, you know, in an hour long podcast you don't get to talk about. But the problem is how you look at your challenges. And I mentioned the national championship team that was so gifted. You know, we probably had three teams, honestly, that were better than them that didn't quite make it there. If we had had the playoff system then that we have now, we would have certainly been in the mix in maybe five or six of those. But it was, you know, it was those hard times that mold you the most. And I really look back, if you've got the right kind of foundation, and I would include my wife, my friends, you know, supportive that lift you up when those times are there, just so surround yourself with the right kind of people to begin with. But I look back at my favorite team is probably the 94 team that Heath Shuler had graduated, actually not graduated, but had gone early to pro football. And I understand that it's big business. Had, you know, 19 million good reasons to go, you know, to pro football. And a young man named Jerry Colquitt was going to be our starter. And it was really a challenge to figure out whether it was going to be Jerry or Heath or Jerry or Heath. And Heath won the job and Jerry stayed, you know, and he could have transferred anywhere he wanted to, but he was a Tennessee kid and talented, 6'4", 215, could make all the throws. And that team really bonded around Jerry and, you know, you get off season, summer workouts, spring practice leading into the season. I was so excited for Jerry to have this opportunity. And we were playing UCLA in the opener on national television in the Rose Bowl on a Thursday night. ESPN opened the season game. So young coach, young team, you know, we're all headed to UCLA to play in front of the world. And they kick off to us. We take the kickoff and get out to the 25-30-yard line, and we run an option play. And for 5 years, Jerry had waited to be our quarterback, and on the seventh play of the UCLA game, he tears his knee up. He can't play anymore. And we get to the sideline. We go, you know, cry and do, and you know, all that, hug on him. And I mean, I have to get back into the game. And Todd Elton's our backup quarterback. And Todd was a baseball player. He just went into the Hall of Fame in baseball and for the Colorado Rockies. Great young man, great competitor, you know. But he and I both knew that his time was short because he was going to go play baseball about the fifth or sixth game of the season. He could go, and Peyton or Brandon Stewart would be their quarterback. But now he's in the game, got to try to help us win the game. And he brings us back, and we didn't win it, but we were very respectful, 26-24, and Todd did a great job. We beat Georgia the next week, lost to Florida the next week. And in the fourth game of the season, Todd Helton gets nicked a little bit, and all of a sudden he can't play. Not bad, thank goodness, but now we got to play the quarterbacks. What happens a lot of times with young guys, you know, they make mistakes, and we have five turnovers and lose to a team that we're better than, Mississippi State. I'm telling this long story to lead to a point. So, I mean, we're 1-3, and it's not fun at all to be 1-3 as the head coach of Tennessee. So, but we had a real crossroads to navigate. And I asked the coaches, I said, I want you to think of two things on each side of the ball that you can do better that has nothing to do with the rest of the team. And your side of the ball. And they worked at it for a couple hours, and we came up with some things. And I met with a team that night, and you could tell their mode wasn't, you know, they weren't in a good place. They were hunkered down, not looking, setting up, not looking into coach at everything. And they were beat up and getting ready, thought they were getting ready to get beat up again. And I said, guys, here are two things on each side of the ball that we can do better as coaches. And you could almost see the life come back in their demeanor, and they sat up and they were listening. Now they're it's not just their fault, right? So I said, whatever number of games we've got left, eight games we've got left, I don't know how many of them we can win, but if we pull together and get healthy, and we go to practice every day to be the best that we can be, we can turn this season around. And that is probably my favorite team, because out of the ashes that we were in, we won seven of the next eight ball games and won the bowl game. And most of all, we laid the foundation for what turned out to be the best era in modern Tennessee football history. So out of that really, really hard time that we had, we made something great out of it. And that's because we did have the foundation, because we did have the culture, we did have the leadership, we did have the will to fight back. And you know, my grandchildren, my oldest, are starting to really realize, you know, what life's all about. My grandchildren, 14, 15, you know, 16, but the young ones are still just being molded, you know, and they don't even care whether you coach football or not. They just want to learn how to throw the ball or how to get down in a stance or, you know, it's that place in life that you're really changing them as they go because of how you treat them. So, we're very blessed to have had the success that we've had, but if I can help one child that needs support, you know, I think that's my place in life right now.
Let's pause to hear a word from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Ditch the Suits podcast. If you're looking to get the most from your money in life, Ditch the Suits has to be your go-to source. Your hosts, Travis Moss and Steve Campbell, they'll talk to you about financial planning topics that nobody in the financial services industry wants you to know about. They're going to expose news and media and headlines because there's no fluff and absolutely no sugarcoating, just relevant topics that can empower you to get the most from your money and your life. Listen to Ditch the Suits today on all major podcast platforms.
Yeah, and I wonder if it's kind of like with your kids, is it wrong as a coach to say you had a favorite team? Like, is that kind of like acknowledging you have a favorite child, like in a way, you know? But I think it's what you had talked about. It's probably the lessons learned that made the 94 season special to you.
Absolutely.
And I think for a lot of us today, you know, I think the hard part is we look at the high water marks of people's life because of social media and what's in the news. And you would assume that the 98 team was what everything was built around because that was a culmination of probably what started in 1994. And so I wonder if there's just people right now that are in a 94 season of life. You know, they had every expectation of this, you know, 2024 being their year, and maybe already so far the year has kind of, like you talked about with your player, you know, seven plays in, couple months into this thing, couple weeks into this thing, they're sidelined in a way that they never thought, or something has happened. You never know though how those challenges are going to be shaping the culture and the foundation for what's to come down the road. And I think if you probably look back on your life, you know, probably the things that God allowed to happen to you that in the moment seemed very challenging were probably more shaping who you are as a person and revealing parts of your character than even maybe the championships did. And so, you know, even for having the context for individuals today to know that just because things have happened that were beyond your control doesn't mean that it's all for naught or that there's a loss in it. It's more of just when setback happens, how can you collectively look at what's happening, regroup, re-come back together, bond together, acknowledge that this is going to be a challenge. And like you said, you went on to win, I think, 7 of 8 games and win a bowl game. So that's a huge testament. That doesn't just happen. That takes great coaching. And as a parent or a spouse, and many times as a parent, you are a coach. You're a coach to shaping the lives of young kids. And I think it's just hard sometimes when you are trying to navigate being the best parent you can and challenges come up, whether it be financially, physically, mentally, emotionally, that it can just wear you out. But I think it's, again, using your story, and that's why I love having guests from all walks of life. You can use a sports analogy or what happened in your life in football to be a metaphor for the fact that this could be your 94 season, but it's preparing you for a championship run. And so just don't throw that season out. Just try to learn from it. And so I know that we only have, you know, here a little bit more time today, Coach. I know that you've been just an amazing kind of guest for perspective, sharing part of your story. Are there any other, you know, life lessons that you think, again, if you had an opportunity to speak to a different kind of audience outside of the sports realm, that you think might help encourage maybe an individual or a family that is in maybe a challenging time right now?
Yeah, you know, having your priorities in order, and I look back at mistakes that I made. Certainly, you know, you get the fear of failure sometime that maybe takes you away from your family and doing more than when you really need to be probably helping them or them helping you, you know, feel better about what you're trying to do. The time thing is really important. You know, I would do a lot different if I had had it to do over, because there were trips that I made that were maybe unnecessary or unneeded, or maybe I needed to be somewhere else at another time. So that's a balancing act. You have to do that. I will tell you, when I left UT, I was intent on getting a job. I wasn't sure where, as far as a head coaching job, another head coaching job. And I was in Nashville, at the Opryland Hotel, talking as we had a national convention, and we had coaches everywhere, you know, it's weird. That was a place to go meet people and talk to them about, working for me. And I had three or four jobs kind of to look at. And my friend R.C. Slocum stopped me in the hallway and said, "Let's get a cup of coffee." And he said, "You've got all these beautiful grandchildren now, and you're in a place in life where you can really support life, enjoy life, and support your family." And you know, we had been very blessed not to have to move. Usually in coaching, a lot of times you have to move up the corporate ladder. You had to move all over the country, and we didn't have to do that, fortunately. And he didn't either. He was at Texas A&M a long time, and I was at Tennessee for a long time. But he said something to me. He said he put 100 pennies on the table. He had a roll of pennies and broke it open and put 100 pennies on the table. And he said, "How old are you?" And I said, "Well, I'm 58. So he takes 58 pennies off the table. And he said, "Let's say you live to 85. So he takes 15 more pennies off the table. And I'm looking at that's not a lot of pennies. And he takes 5 more off the table. He says, if you live 85, those last five years won't be great anyway. So he takes 5 more pennies off the table. And he said, "This is the real point of this whole thing. It's very important to count your pennies, but it's more important to make your pennies count. So the pennies are the years, and you got to make sure those years, those days, those hours that you're spending that are something that makes your pennies count."
Well, and I think, you know, for you, having somebody with your experience, your accolades, I think that it is an honor of mine to have a platform that the Lord has given me to be able to steal 40, 50 minutes with somebody who, you know, in many of our eyes is legendary because of what you've been able to do on a football field. But I will tell you that I have not only, you know, witnessed over the years watching football myself, all of your accolades. I think it's just very cool to now see, you know, standing on first base as a first base coach in Little League, or sitting on against the wall, just in, you know, a sweatshirt and shorts supporting your grandkids. I think it's that you have continued to invest in individuals your entire life, whether it be a coach or as a dad, or, you know, even as a grandparent, and seeing the kind of support that you give to your family here locally, I think is something that, you know, many of us that are trying to lead well by example, trying to develop principles within our own families of values. Because again, you know, I talk about on the show all the time, I think being a young parent today is probably, every generation thinks that they have the most challenging generation, but I think that there are some real challenges facing my generation today, you know, about what family is, what family stands for, how you should raise your kids, how you should, you know, look at your marriage. And there's so many things that are coming against constantly younger people about what they should do and what's correct and what's wrong. And I think when you have somebody that you have the opportunity to watch lead their family well by example, it's a great opportunity for you to say, what is it about Coach Phil Fulmer that allowed him to lead so well? That's something that I can champion myself after. So for those that have maybe never heard part of your rich history and story of coaching, from being a player all the way up through being an assistant to leading all the way to a national championship and your role as an athletic director, you've done some of the most high-pressure stake things. Being a college football coach in the SEC, I've learned very quickly, is probably one of the most high-pressure stakes roles that you can be in. But I want to help the listener understand, don't discount the fact that maybe you don't have a platform that everybody sees. You know, just because you may not be, you know, behind a podium or behind a microphone or owning a business, don't negate or don't look down or devalue you know, the role that you play in this life, especially if you're married and you have little kids at home, make the best of your, I'm going to say your 94 season with whatever that looks like for you right now. Think about all those things in your life right now that maybe are a little bit broken, aren't exactly the way that you wish they were going. Maybe it's been those curveballs. What can you do with it? And if you had listened to Dr. Selking from a couple of episodes ago, she is the mental performance coach for LSU football with Brian Kelly. She's a very strong believer. And in her episode, she talked about so much that our thoughts can determine and affect our health and our mental ability, the things that we think about, the things that we say to ourselves, the narratives that we have. And so use Coach's story today to recognize that it's not always all about championships, but it's more about the things that lead to a championship run. And if there's anything that my listeners, I hope you can take away, is you never know when that run of wins, that run of championships is about to begin. It can happen today if you wanted to. So Coach, I just appreciate you coming on this podcast. I appreciate you making yourself available. Okay. Again, you are have made such an impact on the lives of people here in East Tennessee. And I hope that for those that have never had the chance to hear your story, that again, it's not the last last stop here on the One Big Thing podcast. So again, thanks for being my guest.
And I would encourage your listeners to think about those teachers, those coaches that are around our young people, and influencing them in a positive way, and appreciate what they're doing, because it sure made a difference in my life. Not that I didn't have a foundation at my home, but what the impact that our teachers and our children, teachers and our counselors have on our children is very important.